fall. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are right smack dab in the middle of it.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. This is the beginning of our second hour. I'm your host, George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield Brown is still on vacation. Welcome back, Bill Hendon.
Thank you, George. I'm thrilled to be with you.
Yeah, Bill Hendon is the author of a book entitled An Enormous Crime, and it exposes the scandalous betrayal by successive governments, including John McCain and John Kerry, in 1992 in turning their backs on veterans left behind as POWs in Vietnam. And it's just really a fine book. I do have a surprise for you. Welcome also Ted Sampley to our program.
Teddy boy, what are you doing?
Thanks for having me aboard. How you doing?
Okay. Welcome aboard there, Ted Sampley. What do you have to say to Bill Hendon anyway?
Actually, I don't have a lot to say to Bill. What I have to say, though, is you have a gift that I guarantee you, I promise you, is the world's most expert on the Vietnamese prison system. I can tell you he knows those prison systems up, down, all around. He knows the Vietnamese name. He knows the Vietnamese slang name. He knows the American name. He knows more about those prison systems than the POWs claim to know. And you'll find, when reading Enormous Crime, that there's so much in it that when these prisoners, like John McCain, come back and say, oh, we knew everybody was in there, they absolutely did not know. All I can say is if it had not been for Billy Hendon over the many years that I've known him, being a true champion when he was in Congress, when he was out of Congress, and now of the men that America left behind and abandoned, this issue people would not know what happened, as much about what happened to these men as they do now. And that is because of the efforts of Bill Hendon and Beth Stewart.
Beth Stewart, George, thank you, Teddy. You're my buddy, and I love you like a brother and always have. And I got to repay the favor here. Ted Sampley served two tours in Vietnam, Green Beret. He's as tough as a pine knot, as we say down south.
Is that what y'all say down there?
Yeah, that's what we say.
Well, he's into pottery now, though. He's into some artistic, beautiful stuff, right?
Well, he's
softening a little bit, right?
Well, they like me, they've called him every name in the book, and it doesn't faze him. And he has fought for these men, and if I've ever been proud of a guy being on the line with me, And Red McDaniel and Bob Smith and Beth Stewart, who's a co-author of this book, Her Father's Missing in Vietnam, and all these families. Ted's father-in-law a while back was MIA. And listen, they are an inspiration. And Sampley runs a little newspaper down in North Carolina, a veterans newspaper. It's online now. It's called the U.S. Veteran Dispatch, I think it's called. But I'm telling you, the stuff he puts out is truthful. He doesn't beat around the bush. And, you know, if the mainstream media, well, of course, the mainstream media reads Sampley because they want, you know, they may not print the truth, but at least they want to know it. And check his website out. He's got some powerful stuff on it. If you want the truth about what's going on in the Middle East, in Southeast Asia, in the military, Sampley's got it. He's a first-class guy and a buddy of mine, and I'm proud to say so.
Ted, could you tell us about Rolling Thunder a little bit and some of the other activities that you have underway?
Rolling Thunder has been around for over 20 years now, and I'm one of the founding members of it. And it got its start for one reason. and that is they're trying to keep it in front of the public the issue of American servicemen that America left behind. These are people that Bill Hinden has tracked left, right, up and down. He's found documentation. He's tracked them into the prison camps. He's tracked their calls for help. He's documented it. These are the people that Rolling Thunder was formed to try and keep the light on. It has grown to gigantic size now to go on the 20th anniversary. I think we had something like 700,000 show up in Washington, D.C. It's grown so big that I fear that many of the people coming for Rolling Thunder may or may not know why Rolling Thunder was formed. But the issue of American servicemen left behind is still there. And Bill Hinden, all these years, he sacrificed a lot in Congress. I'm willing to say that he sacrificed his seat getting reelected, trying to bring to light these men, their calls for help. And Bill was able to see the classified reports as they were coming through. And these men were sending out signals. And, I mean, they were doing everything but waving the red, white, and blue from a rice paddy. And they were trying to do that. And I'm sure he can tell you that. He has already.
You know, they keep saying, giving reasons why they haven't done anything. Was there some drug smuggling going on in the Golden Triangle in there that may be one reason why they don't want some of these men out of there?
I've heard, you know, that maybe there was some CIA involvement there, but the issue goes a lot deeper than that. It's more complicated than that. And I just put it in my own terms that what it amounted to is we asked these men to go serve. They went and served. They come up missing, and when the shooting stopped, when the politicians wanted to start slapping each other on the back, they looked around, and they had this handful of forgotten ghosts. They just wanted to brush them under the rug and leave them alone. And primarily, as Billy will point out in his book, they certainly did not want to pay any reparations for them.
Well, now, was there not
Billy
a secret?
That real well.
Yeah, for this question for Bill Hinden. Bill, was there not a secret agreement to pay them over $4 billion, the North Vietnamese, for release of all of the POWs? Was that a secret agreement or what?
It certainly was. Kissinger negotiated it, and it was based on the Bay of Pigs prisoners, George. Ted knows this, that in, you know, the Bay of Pigs prisoners came back, Jack Kennedy and his brother Bobby. They paid $62 million, I think it was, or $58 million, whatever, to get them back. And that was in 1962 and 3. And the Vietnamese War was just getting started about that time. And Castro went to the Vietnamese when the war started getting hot. And he told them, said, listen, these Americans will pay. And what you want to do is you want to capture as many of them alive as you can. And you hold them because at the end of the war, they'll pay. Because the Kennedys paid for these guys out of my country that I captured. Well, it's exactly what happened, and we talk about it in the book. Kissinger ended up, and the Paris Peace Accords confirms it, and Kissinger went to Hanoi to confirm it in person in February 1973, that the U.S. government would pay $4.75 billion to the North Vietnamese if they quit fighting and give us our prisoners back. And they agreed to do it. And what was going to be was a North Korea South Korea deal, where the North was going to remain communist, the South was going to remain free, just like North Korea and South Korea. But and the North Vietnamese, and I'm convinced of this, a lot of people aren't, but they agreed to stop fighting if we would help them rebuild their country, all the war damage. Kissinger agreed to pay $4.75 billion if they give us the prisoners back. They gave us McCain and, thank God, 576 other guys. They gave us half of them and went to Kissinger and said, okay, give us our money. And Kissinger said, sorry, the joke's on you. And they said, Henry, the joke's on you because we only gave you half. And when you're ready to pay, we'll give you the rest of them. And they've been saying it all the way up until 2000.
I got
when
you.
Clinton.
We've got to cut away. We'll be right back. Bye. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm your host, George Butler. Welcome back, Bill Hendon and Ted Sampley. And Ted Sampley, welcome back, too.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, George. Hey,
yes,
George.
Yes.
I want to tell you something about sampling.
Okay, tell me.
Is it nice?
It's all nice.
Okay.
I'm as proud to call that guy a friend as anybody I've got that I call a friend.
Okay.
In 1987 and 1988, this thing really started heating up. The boat people were just pouring out with all these reports, and the vets started coming with this Rolling Thunder thing that Ted's on the board of, and they started coming, and they came to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial first in 1988. It's in the book. We got a picture of them. There's just about 2,500 of them that came that year on their bikes. And I think Ted said now there's 750,000. But here's the deal. There was a booth that Sampley set up down there at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And he did it. He had to fight the Park Service, the administration, the police, everybody else, all the people in town, in Congress that were against it. And Sampley's booth, it was called the Last Firebase, and Ted manned it, and vets manned it, about 10 or 12 guys, just a core group. And so when Rolling Thunder started, they had a place to come. They came to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, and everybody grouped up over at Sampley's, and Top Holland had one also, booth, John Holland, we mentioned him earlier.
Yes, uh-huh.
And this was the nucleus of the entire Vietnam Veterans movement to get these men home. John Holland and Ted Sampley, who's on the phone right now. And so everything that's come out of it, I'm telling you, they're responsible for. Not me and the guys in Congress, not Bob Smith, not Red McDaniel, the former POW's done so much, but these guys, they were the nucleus of it, and Sampley and Top remain the nucleus of it today.
You make a good point there. It was all this red tape that almost kept something very good from happening, didn't it?
You asked Ted.
You see what I mean? What was that about? What did you have to go through to get those boots in there, Ted?
Oh, good God! We figured out a way to take advantage of some loopholes. But basically, it was through the permit system. But they certainly didn't want us there, and we worked very hard to evict us. But let me drop back a second. Billy's book, An Enormous Crime. It is a long read, but it's a really interesting read, and it gives you a history, another perspective on Vietnam, and he documents it, document after document, and he's got it on the internet. But if you'll get that book and you read it, you won't ask any questions anymore. Why would the Vietnamese keep them, or why would the U.S. government leave them, or why would John Kerry, the Viet Cong sympathizer John Kerry, why would he side with the Vietnamese to kill these men on paper? And why would John McCain side with the Vietnamese to kill these men on paper? And that's exactly what they did. I want to mention something here, though. The Senate Select Committee in 1992, which Billy played a critical role in, so critical that the Kerry crowd finally got him fired, got him ejected from the committee. In their final report, they begrudgingly, and they hid it because Kerry's people edited the report, they said, yes, we left American servicemen behind alive in captivity, but there's no proof they're alive today. Well, where's the proof they're dead? Billy has given proof after proof that they're still alive, or maybe more still alive.
They've done everything to sabotage going in there and bringing them home.
You know, you're supposed to, these are American servicemen, they're supposed to get the benefit of the doubt. If they were left behind alive, and we don't know where they are today, and we're giving Vietnam normalized relations, trade relations, what the heck are we even dealing with these guys for, these communists for, until they start answering these questions?
I'll tell you one thing, Ted and George, the Pentagon knows where they are. You can better believe that. And Ted made about 8 or 10 trips over there in the post-war period trying to get the men out. I made 33. My co-author, Beth Stewart, went over there about 15 times. A whole bunch of us have gone, not to go back and look at the scenery, But to bang on the prison yard, on the gate, and demand to get in. Now, Sampley almost got arrested over in Laos. I got thrown out of the country, declared persona non grata. Beth got thrown out. Lamont Gaston, the head of Vietnam, he got thrown out. We demanded to go to those prisons. And the U.S. government just stood back and did nothing to help us.
I want to disagree with you a second, just a little bit. The Vietnamese, I mean, the United States government didn't do nothing. What they did is, if I remember distinctly seeing a picture of you handcuffed to a fence out there outside of a U.S. compound, telling them, come get me, I'll show you where to go, just give me a helicopter, give me a Jeep, come with me, I'll show you where this camp is, I'll show you where the Americans are. And they wouldn't listen to Billy, they wouldn't listen. Finally, he handcuffs himself to the fence and says, I'm not leaving till you go with me. They cut the handcuffs off and told him to go away, and they kicked him out of the country. Now, why wouldn't they go?
Honestly, George, I stood out in front of the U.S. MIA office, and they wouldn't let me in. And finally, I handcuffed myself to the gate, and I stood there and yelled, bring the keys to the four-wheel drive over there. It's a Mitsubishi four-wheel. Bring the keys. And come with me, and I will take you right to where the Americans are in the underground prison right now. And they came out and cut the handcuffs off the gate, and the Vietnamese took me downtown, put me on a little trial, declared me persona non grata. I'm not saying that they were going to hurt me or I was in any danger. I wasn't. Ted Sampley was in danger when the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese were shooting at him.
Yeah.
But they just threw me out of the country, and they told me if you ever come back, Billy Boy, it's going to be a long stay. So I haven't been back since 1995. But the point is, the U.S. government didn't have the guts to go to the prison where the men were.
We should have never normalized relationships with Vietnam without those men being returned or some kind of agreement about
returning. Well, it's an enormous crime that we did.
Yes.
And in spite of everything that Teddy Sampley and all of his buddies did, and we did, and you did, and the straight-thinking people of America wanted done, this government here in Washington, Ted, have you ever seen anything to equal it in your life?
No, I haven't, and I don't want to see it again. I mean, it's just unbelievable how a government can turn around and turn on its warriors and just brush them under the rug and act like they didn't exist.
You know something, and this terrifies me, and I pray for these men and women in the Middle East. They'll do it again. If we don't get these men out of Indochina, they'll do it again if the going gets tough in the Middle East.
You know, Billy, John McCain's boy just come back from Iraq. I put a little piece in my paper about the walking cane. I don't explain what that is yet. I wish you would. But it was a message that was a very clear message that was sent out of Southeast Asia. Was it? I mean, Laos. Of American servicemen missing. And I raised the question, John McCain, you decided.
Okay, we've got to cut away, Ted. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm your host, George Butler. Welcome back, Bill Hendon and Ted Sampley.
Thank you, George.
Let me put this number out a second here. 1-800-259-9231. 1-800-259-9231. If you have a question for either one of our guests here, feel free to call in.
Hey, George.
Yes,
George.
Yes,
Ted was talking a minute ago about this message that he put in his newspaper. Ted, before you came on the air, I was telling him that on the cover of our book, this USA with the walking K under it is the and McCain said it's a satellite image where the guy is begging, or the guys are begging for the satellite to tell somebody to come get us and rescue us. And McCain says it's just a bunch of garbage. Now take it from there, Ted.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it just blew me away for McCain to take such an important piece of evidence and discount it the way he did. And So I wrote an article in the paper, and I believe it's Jimmy McCain's son, right? Jimmy? Anyway, John McCain's boy was over in Iraq. Thank God for his service. Thank him for serving. Thank God he came home safe. But while he was there, if he had come up missing and he'd managed to get a walking key of his own identity out and stuck out in the desert like that, and the satellite picked it up, would John McCain be so quick to discount it as he discounted the walking case from Vietnam? He's betrayed those men. Would he betray his son? And that was the question, because he hurt a lot of POW families. He's the people that supported him during the war, people that camped or that were activists walking the streets trying to get the communists to treat him and all the POWs better. McCain turned on him when he come back. He basically have carried water for the communists ever since he got back. When he got in Congress and the Senate, he gave them everything they want, despite the Vietnamese not giving the answers that they had given the answers they had about the men that were
assigned. Hey, Ted, and George, here's the scariest part about this whole discussion. Honest to God, the scariest part for our country. If John McCain, and John McCain knows that these men were left behind because he was a major part of leaving them behind, and he gave the Vietnamese a free pass, normalized relations, chummy, let's be friends, and all that stuff. Now, if he's elected president, or right now, his greatest nightmare is one of these men coming out and saying, why didn't you come get me? Now, what if the Vietnamese, if he's elected president, what if they dangle one of them out and say, John, Mr. President, you better do what we want you to do, buddy, or we're going to dump this guy out, and you'll be impeached and embarrassed and humiliated and run out of the White House. Now, you talk about a foreign power controlling the president of the United States. Try that one on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that could be very, very dangerous.
Tell me about it.
I never thought about that, but that's very, very dangerous for our country.
Keep in mind what the Senate Select Committee final report said. Yes, we left people behind alive in captivity. Yes, we left them behind.
McCain.
They never went any further.
But then they said that they were all dead or something. That was the excuse not to pursue it.
There's no evidence they're alive.
Yeah, they did that just to get rid of the issue.
McCain's greatest nightmare is one of these guys or a bunch of them coming across that river or somehow getting out of there alive. And the Vietnamese know that, and the Pathet Lao, the communist Lao know that. So what do? If he gets elected president, they've got him.
Yeah, that's terrible.
It's a scary thought.
Yeah, it is scary.
We got a sign up on one of our web pages talking about the presidential election. It says the lesser of two evils is still evil, referring to McCain being the lesser of two evils.
Well, I'll tell you something. I don't want my president controlled by the North Vietnamese.
Well, both of these candidates, that's why Ron Paul was such a marvelous candidate. Both these candidates are going for the North American Union and all that other stuff.
They're
at that level. They're bringing in this whole new world order on us.
Listen, our country is in the biggest trouble it's been in.
It's dangerous.
Surely in my lifetime.
It's very
dangerous. 63 years old. It's in the biggest trouble it's been in since Pearl Harbor. There's no question about it. And dear God, all we can do is just pray. But look at the options we got.
Yeah, I mean,
actually, there's a third party if people just go there. But in any case, let me say this, because I don't want to miss the point. Billy's book, all I can say is if you really want the answer, get it and read it. I bought several of them, sent them around to family and friends, and they all called me back and just told me how amazed they were at the information that was in there and the answers.
Well, it's all true.
I'm not just trying to sell this book, because I'm just trying to tell you that the answers are there. That people call me and email me all the time. Why did they do this? Why did they do that? read Enormous Crime. You don't have to ask. It's there.
I made a point earlier, Ted, and the point I made was not only is the book an excellent book on the POWs and all that, but it also is an educative tool for the average American citizen to say, look, this thing is real bad in Washington, D.C. It's a lot worse than you could ever imagine. It's a lot more corrupt, and they don't really give a damn about our military.
Well, I'm not sure they give a damn about anything except themselves.
That's it. They built themselves up in little demigods or something.
The perfect example of it is John Kerry and John McCain. They have done more damage to the men left behind than the Vietnamese ever did.
That's right, and that's from either party there.
You know, it's interesting that the communist Vietnamese are endorsing John McCain. Why would they do that?
Well, Pelosi and them go in with this idea that they're going to straighten out the Iraq deal. They haven't done anything.
No.
They're working the deals with the Republicans just like, you know, like before. There's no big change on Iraq, see?
Well, you know, go ahead,
Ted.
I'm losing my voice a little bit. The issue is the American servicemen known to be alive in captivity. And Billy has documented a lot more numbers than I ever believed there were. And he's documented it. That were left behind alive. And the Vietnamese have never been required to explain what happened to them. Yet we gave them, or John Kerry, John McCain, and Bill Clinton, and George Bush Sr., started the movement to give the Vietnamese everything they wanted, and we got nothing in return. In a lot of cases, we got coffins draped with flags that had nothing but pig bones in them, and they claimed to be American soldiers. That's the extent of the betrayal. Of what these people in Washington, D.C. do to betray a serviceman and woman.
Well, the scary part about it, of course, is not only that these men, I'm sitting here in my office in Washington looking at these maps of Indochina right now and the prisons and all that stuff and just knowing what's going on over there. And it's right now a quarter to 11 in the morning. Tomorrow morning, these boys are suffering. They want out. They're not in some little village with some woman and a bunch of little kids and chickens running around in the yard. These men are in prison. They're suffering. They're not dope smokers. They are American servicemen, and they're suffering. And the government knows they're there. Now, if they'll do that to these men for 30 years, what will they do to our people in Iraq?
Or even worse, in Afghanistan. Afghanistan might have a greater, evil potential for being captured there than in even Iraq.
I pray none of them are captured.
Well, we've got those territories in there, you know, where the tribal territories are. They could take them in there and they could disappear them, see. We've got to take another break here and we'll be right back. 257 weeks, but you could be waiting for a day that won't come. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, your host. Welcome back, Bill Hendon and Ted Santley.
Thank you, George.
You know, we interviewed back on May 3rd, okay, for 2 full hours. We interviewed William Lewis. He has a video out. It's called Washington, You're Fired.
I wish.
You know, maybe that 750,000 man army you've got there, Ted, ought to go in there and give them their walking papers. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, if we could ever get them aimed in the same direction.
Yeah,
a lot
I know.
Of free spirits there.
Bill, what in closing comments here, we have this last segment. What advice would you give to your fellow Americans and your fellow, the veterans out there and all the American public in general?
Pray for this country. We're in desperate straits. We're in the biggest trouble we've been in so long, and I'm embarrassed to say it's my Republican Party that's done it, okay? And that's not to say that the Democrats aren't a huge part of it, but just look at the record here, and we haven't done so well. And when you don't do well and you really screw up, then the other side comes in with the tide, and they come in with a vengeance. And we can only pray that the other side somehow will see the light and won't ruin our country in the process. But we're going to have a big change, it looks like, this fall. And I guess that's
the
just
red,
the way
the
it
red
is.
Tide coming in. We got the red tide coming in.
What are you saying? What are you saying there, Ted? What's your opinion?
I say, well, Billy's absolutely right. And I'll go a step further. It's the red tide. It's a poisonous tide coming in.
Well, you know,
Teddy, I'm afraid it's our fault.
I agree with you. We dropped the ball.
We lost the moral compass.
They've lost everything.
Yep. And just a bunch of crooks and a bunch of liars. And
well, now what we can
let,
do,
let
you
me
know.
Add, let me add something to the POWs.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right quick. I wanted to say a while ago. You know, these returned POWs, God bless them. God, thank you for coming home. My son's grandfather has not come home yet. He was missing in Laos. But they all come home and they all cleaned that they knew everybody that was alive in prison. They're not telling the truth. That's a fantasy they have. That they hang on to protect their own conscience that they should have, but knowing they're not telling the truth. It was impossible for those men to know who was captured and who was, and where they were being held. Billy, I can't remember the number of different prison camps that they had all over North Vietnam alone.
Sure.
But there were so many of them. I don't know if you know the number off the top of your head or not.
Nah, but these guys couldn't have known. They kept them in two different systems. One and a half of them came back on the pledge that Kissinger and Nixon and the Paris Peace Accords were going to pay them the money. The other half would have been surfaced if they'd gotten the money. They didn't get the money. And you know what they did, Ted? They went and took South Vietnam. They didn't take South Vietnam until the money was denied them. And I'm not trying to be on the on the side of the communists. But they got screwed, and they went and took the South.
So we at the highest levels, Kissinger, all them, they violated an agreement.
Of course they did, and
they
Kissinger
lied to the American people. They lied.
And
Kissinger,
and then they're hiding it. They're hiding it and all that.
And Kissinger is McCain's chief foreign policy advisor.
Well, is he in and out of the White House now a lot, too?
I'm sure he is. He's sitting up in New York eating steak and drinking wine while these men suffer in Indochina. And it's an enormous crime.
Yes,
and
it
I
is.
Pray that this thing will somehow work out for these brave, abandoned men.
Well, Ron Paul has campaigned for liberty, and he has this rally for the Republic up in Minnesota. We're going to all go in there. And we're going to try to make a difference and start organizing. In Texas alone, we had nearly a third of the state delegates in June.
I know you did. I've got a story in the U.S. Veteran Dispatch we just posted. Colonel Riley, he's organizing Patriots Revolt. Basically,
George Riley?
Colonel Harry Riley.
Okay.
And he's organizing Patriots Revolt, which is trying to get Americans to stand up and revolt against both parties right now.
Well, yeah, we've got to see that those two party systems were dialectically dividing us, see? And then they would use us. Both party hierarchies have been using both membership of both parties.
I think the best thing could happen to our country right now would somehow McCain drop out or get thrown out before the convention in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and get a new Republican nominee and let him beat Obama, and maybe we could save this country. But I'm telling you, pray for this country and pray for these brave men, George.
Yeah,
happens, they'll take McCain off that medication that they're keeping him on to keep him from losing.
What I see, McCain is a nominal, candidate against Obama. Obama's slated to go in, and I think McCain is just being put forward as some kind of a. It's just to trick everybody into thinking that they've got some kind of choice here. You know what I mean?
It's a sad day for our country. The choice is lousy.
Yes, it is.
And the options are lousy, and I just pray that the future is not lousy. But again, Ted and I have spent a lifetime trying to get these brave men home, and we think it would be good for America, not bad for America like McCain and Kerry and Kissinger think. We think it would be good for America to to get these brave men out of there.
Well, you know what we need to do is go to Obama and say, where do you stand on this issue?
He's going to go to Kerry, and they ain't going to do nothing. Huh? Nobody's going to do anything.
Well, then we need to publicize his response.
We need a break. Right. Is what we need.
You gotta lift this press. It's not going to go.
I know. It's politics quite a bit, pretty well. You know.
Well, if we get a break in Indochina somehow, that's what we're all praying for. Ted's helped us. We offer a big reward for these guys, $2.5 million. That's big in Indochina, and maybe that'll work.
We need to get somebody out of that system that can testify.
Yeah.
Let me tell you how corrupt the U.S. government is. Talk about that reward. And Billy, how many Congress? 22 congressmen, I believe it was. 23, most of them congressmen, pledged $100,000 each back to Charlotte Motor Speedway just for the return. Is anybody in Southeast Asia that can orchestrate the return of a live prisoner of war? The government, through their channels in Thailand, right on into Laos, into Vietnam, changed that message. And tried to turn it into anybody bringing bones in. That's not what.
Oh yeah, so, to make
it. They polluted the whole message. Then they
from alive to dead remains.
That's right.
And so then they turned.
They kill the very essence of the reward, right?
Of course, these are bad. These are bad boys.
I call it mind sorcery. These guys are sorcerers. What they are?
They really are. And well, George. Thank you for letting me and Ted be a part of this tonight. And
really, God
and
bless
thank
you, and thank you for everything you've done.
Well, a little bit. But y'all were way ahead of this for decades.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm lucky enough to have a book that's going to sit on the library shelves for a long time. But Teddy Sampley's name ought to be right there on the Heroes of America list, okay? Because what he's done for these men and organizing the vets, and being down there and being thrown in jail for having that vigil that he had down at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. He's a hero, and don't ever forget it.
I can agree with that. It seems like the biggest scoundrels in America build the biggest statues and the biggest libraries for one another.
Oh, man.
You see what I mean?
Yep.
And they perpetuate. That's what happens really on this issue, where they're covering up each other's problems.
Well, you imagine the North Vietnamese having complete control of McCain because they're going to tell him, hey, Johnny, you do what we say or we're going to dump a guy out and you'll be impeached. That's the scariest thing.
And they might have more than that on him, too, when he was in captivity.
Keep in mind that the Chinese and the former Soviets, which would be the Russians, were also involved in that intelligence. So you know, tell them what.
Yeah,
they were
interrogating many of our prisoners.
Pray for these men in Indochina and pray for our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world that this never, ever happens to them.
Exactly. That's for sure.
I'm going to sign off from Washington, D.C. Oh,
okay, thank you, Bill.
Thank
Hinden.
You for having me on. Teddy, I'll see you on Veterans Day.
Thank you
boy.
Very much, Bill. We appreciate
okay,
your
Jordan.
Time. Good night. Ted, are you still there?
Yeah, Ted, I'm going to sign off from one.
Hey, that's Light a Little Candle, one of my songs, so let's do that, okay?
All right.
Thank you, Ted. Good night. Appreciate it. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. Charlotte Littlefield Brown and I came up with that, and we really believe that the solution is to forgive oneself and others. And through that, we can awaken. We can provide an infinitesimally bit of God's grace to others. And it frees you. It takes a burden off your shoulders. To forgive is the way. Is the only way. It is wisdom. Thanks for listening. Good night. There you have it, close to 2 hours. with Bill Hendon, author of An Enormous Crime. He was joined by one of the founders of Rolling Thunder there in, at the end. And we just, you know, we're doing this in memory of our veterans overseas. We just can't, you know what I mean, make an emphasis or an important point enough about what's going on in this country. And we just have to be quit being fools, you know. We've been fooled, you know. We've been deluded. Delusion is a good word to use, I think, to describe sometimes our present, you know, state of affairs, our mindset, you know. You know, just to describe what's really going on out there. President Trump just got back from an international trip. And, you know, he and Melania were a really good team. They were at the Vatican, and she's, you know, declaring herself as being a Catholic. I think they were married in a Presbyterian church down in Florida, Episcopalian church maybe. But anyway, so she had an audience with the Pope, so that was important for Melania. They end up, she's addressing some American group down there on a base down there in Italy, and that went over real well. So, and they're holding hands again. The press was in there, you know, really, you know what I mean, hitting on them. We had the election out in Montana. That was a close election after a body slam by one of the Republican candidate. But I guess out there, maybe they overlook a man-to-man way men settle their differences sometimes. And it can be physical. And I'm not saying it was warranted or anything else, but when you're dealing with men out there anywhere in the world, men tend to, at times, settle their differences in a physical way, and that's not always good. We have all kinds of, now that Trump is back in Washington, D.C., I think he's headed back Saturday today, and we're going to have a battle group or whatever, a war room, I think, is what Trump is getting together. And I think he's going to put Bannon in there and Jared Kushner. Now, the latest scandal about Jared Kushner is that he was working on a secret back channel with the Russians, see? And so there's all these leaks, and they're happening, and it's the deep state is doing all this. But, you know, when Trump and them were talking about their plans, this was after the election, they should have not been so naive and should have never had any meetings in Trump Tower, because there's all kinds of bugs through there probably. Some planted, they could open up phone lines on you, open up cell phones, their cell phones. They could hack all of that stuff. So they were listening to them all the time. And that combined with doing a profile on all, a deep profile analysis of President Trump, before he was inaugurated, they were intercepting his communications. And so they did a really in-depth profile on him and came up with some really, really ways to manipulate and use him. And I think they hustled him. I think his first, you know, 120 days plus in the White House, I think he got hustled. President Trump, you got hustled. And you got hustled by some of these fine minds that you were actually, you know, criticizing during the campaign. And many of the things that you criticize, now you seem to be embracing. So they got to you, see. The neocons in there, these really sharp operators, you know. And they've got minds that are unbelievable, see. And so as a result, I think that they got you. They got you. You know. Now, I mean, you're combative and you're a fighter. So I guess you got this war, you know, room going. And we'll see how successful that is. I said months ago in addressing not only President Trump, but the general, you know, listening audience here in Austin of our program, that unless Trump could overcome his ego problem, he was going to fail in his administration. And really, when you think about
all of us. It doesn't matter if you're a Democratic, liberal, or you're a right-wing conservative, charismatic Republican, all across the different individuals and their personalities. We suffer from human nature problems. So can we all avoid being deluded by these great propaganda machines out there? And people are waking up. They're saying that all of this mainstream media is hype, hype, hype. And they're in there for jobs to get a salary. And so they know what to do, how to satisfy their bosses and take care of the goal of the paper, see. They're real careful not to go past a certain line, see what I mean? And that line is always careful, see, to not breach, see. And so they know pretty well what to do and what not to do. And so if they go past a certain line and breach a certain line, then they're going to find their pink slip. You know, they're going to be fired. And so they just parrot, you know. One of my sayings is that, the world is a jungle full of parrots. And I believe that very, very, very strongly. And being parrots, we just, you know, kowtow to our bosses and to our institutions. We're more highly controlled and conditioned and programmed than we could ever imagine. But because we are so highly programmed, when we think of ourselves in such immensely complementary ways, the ego is reaches an all-time high. See, so you know, as a result, we just can't, you know what I mean, overcome that ego. And I'm afraid that with Trump's money and success in the hotel and real estate business and development business, I think it's going to have a hard time doing it. I don't see as he matures, let's put it that way, in office, he'll become a better president. I think he's slowly becoming a better president. I think he's beginning to be more diplomatic or understand a diplomacy type of approach versus this corporate control, you know, command structure that he had to get out of. I mean, that thing just didn't, that wasn't going to do him any good, see. And I think that's where his failures lay in his first 120 plus days, is that he wasn't quite in the mindset of the office of the presidency or the office of the, you know, being president. And I think that's what confused him and worried him. And I see a great worry on his face, and I see him gaining weight. These are not good signs. And I hope that he's not imbibing or taking in food that he doesn't know what's in it. Because this deep state crowd, they'll feed you all kinds of different mind-altering stuff just to get you to go along with their program. So there's no telling what they're doing in the White House or what they're feeding him, see. So he's got to be very careful about that. It'd be better to go down and just go in a cafe at a moment's notice and get you a meal sometimes than eat everything dished to you at the White House. So, but right now we've got this tension between North Korea and the United States, America. I'm going to be bringing on the air soon in the next few days. I'm going to do an interview. And about 30 seconds to midnight, and the man's done a tremendous job in producing a movie, about an hour and a half or so. And what he's saying is in that movie is that we're close to maybe extinguishing humanity. And he interviews people like Helen Caldicott. And Helen Caldicott, we've had her on the program before. And in fact, I persuaded her, hey, Helen, why don't we have a conference on Fukushima? And she went out and did it. I wasn't financially prepared at the time to join in. But she did do a conference in 2013. And Fukushima is an immensely important event in the world's history. It is continuing to, you could say, taint and ruin the North Pacific right at this time. It's not lessening. It hasn't stopped. The radioactivity is still coursing through the northern seaways of the North Pacific, impacting British Columbia and the West Coast. And if I were an astute investor, this happened in 2011, the Fukushima earthquake and tsunami. So if I was an astute investor and had holdings in Japan, they would have been sold off 3 or 4 years ago. I wouldn't hold any real property in Japan at this time because it's not wise to do. You're liable to find Fukushima going up in flames or blowing up or something. And if it does that, it could be a major catastrophe for Tokyo, which is only 120 miles south-southeast, south-southwest of Fukushima. And that's not very far at all for winds to carry, say, plutonium plume or something like that. There's a lot of plutonium around Fukushima that was in storage, and so there's still a great danger of that escaping into the air because of some additional catastrophe. It could take the form of some earthquake or some tropical storm or something that could impact the Fukushima area. They're beginning to move people back in, not within the exclusionary zone, but into the general area. That's a total mistake. It's just the Japanese people have been lied to. And the Japanese Americans, in my way of thinking, have not done a good job in exposing the Fukushima dangers to their native Japanese friends and families or those here in the States. I just see that they failed miserably, the Japanese Americans out there. When I walk by in a restaurant or something, I see Japanese American. I don't even care about talking to them, because this was an issue that concerned their former homeland, you could say, or whatever. They should have taken an interest in this more than I've seen them do. But what they've done is they swallowed the bait that was put out by both the Japanese government and the American government. And they virtually pulled a lot of EPA monitoring and detection resources away from the West Coast. And they have been covering this thing up in the danger of it. When you have people of the caliber and professionalism and with great respect like Helen Caldicott saying this could be an end event, you better start listening, because we're headed possibly towards an end event with Fukushima. It is virtually around the world now. The ocean currents can carry this radiation contamination, and it's virtually, and the winds can carry it even faster than the oceans. So the impact of Fukushima has been very great in the North Pacific in a unique way because of the location. But now we're seeing it have an impact worldwide. I don't see, except for Helen Caldicott and that group, I don't see liberal Democrats get up on this issue. They did not join in. We had in Austin in 2014, Farrell Montgomery and Randall Mock and David Barrow helped some on the second one. And we had other people that joined in. And we did two Fukushima conferences that year. On the second one, we did a 1 day of Ebola and 1 day of Fukushima. And John B. Wells came down. We couldn't scratch together 50 people. And I asked for advertising from KLBJ and stuff. They wouldn't give me the time of day. KLBJ wouldn't. Are these people, do they know what's going on in this country, in this city, or not? I don't think they do. And they had no idea. Now it's becoming more commonly known how dangerous Fukushima was at the time and is continuing to be. So anyway, I got that off my chest a little bit. I was a little resentful about not having any help here on stuff that I put my heart and soul into, and Charlotte did too. But anyway, we've got to get on down the road, and we've got to start telling people. You got to take that iodine and keep the radiation, that thyroid, from taking in radioactive. You get zeolite is something that can migrate radioactive particles out. You better really start looking at preventative ways or ways to protect yourself from radiation exposure. Don't eat any fish coming out of the North Pacific. I've been telling people that for 3 or 4 years, and you just can't do it. It's dangerous. And the seaweed and other things like that, you just don't want to take that into your system. It actually contaminated parts of North America in different areas and locations. You had the Chernobyl that did the same thing to Russia, and you had streams that carried it into Western Europe. So you still got problems in radiation showing up in those areas out there in Western Europe. But you just got to protect. What we have to do now, because we weren't able to interest people enough and get them to really start waking up to the Fukushima thing, we've got to try to get them in health mode of prevention and keep them from worsening their condition, see, on this, Fukushima radiation. And it's getting worse. It's not getting better. So why don't you pick up the phone or go dig down into these sites. There's all kinds of sites. Go to FukushimaSolutions.com. Go to resources. In resources, there's sites all over the world that are doing a heck of a lot better than I'm doing on FukushimaSolutions.com. But go into FukushimaSolutions.com. Go into resources and start clicking off on some of those and getting informed. We've got sites out there. People have dedicated their lives since it happened. It happened 2011. That's 6 years ago. It hasn't stopped. And it's getting worse. It has not gotten better. So what we've got to do is what we've got to try. You know what I mean? To get this thing, under some kind of control. And it's frustrating. And, I really get mad at times about people not appreciating the danger of this thing. But anyway, we're at www.thesecrettruth.com. We broadcast every Saturday night, 7 to 9. We'll have this up tonight on 7 to 9. And Bill Hendon is a fine person that did an overwhelming dedication to this country and to what it's all about. But anyway, check that out and see what you can come up with. But anyway, thank you for listening tonight. Good night.